Really, really, Batman. Really excited.
Bruce Wayne. Yes, Pa?
I'm Batman.
I am the priest.
Welcome to Superstitious and Cowardly, a Batman podcast for the warden us all. I said that correctly that time, and I'm John Pfeiffer.
You hit a lot of bees, though. And I'm Chris Winnie, and Ryan's going to be taking a few issues off due to his one-man show. It's a stage production of Cats. He's okay. It's mostly garbage, but his rumble teaser, soul-shaking.
That really sounded like some Jay Sherman critic stuff. I was really hoping for a bit more.
Let's bring all the young audience in with critic talk.
It's great, though.
Yeah, but it's really old, and it didn't last. All right, so what do we do on this podcast, John?
In this podcast, we're talking about Batman from the early years to today. We're the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, a Batman podcast.
We are. Did you use that one already before?
No, but that
it does seem familiar.
That joke's for me more than anybody.
So once again, steamrolling right to 90s TV. Hey, did you watch the latest episode of Saved by the Bell?
No, but I couldn't watch the college years because I was watching Friends. I think those intersect. So this is... I didn't open my beer that close to the mic that time.
I did, because I had my Propel. Well, John's going to be stunting his performance. I'm going to be enhancing mine.
So this is the first episode that we're recording, just a peek behind the curtain. Ah. The first episode we're recording after releasing an episode. And we had some people listen to it, so I'll take what I can get. I'm not picky. I was like, yay, people are listening to this. One of those two. So that's pretty nice. Right now, we're actually available on a bunch of podcast players and streaming services and stuff like that. I think the only one I'm missing is like Spotify or something. So that's been really fun. We also, our Twitter is up and running. So that is at @SACBatPod. So in this episode,
Loosen podcast free. Would you like to talk about some Batman with me?
You know what? That was really endearing. I know. Thank you. In this episode, we're going to be talking about Detective Comics 38.
Kermit's fucking dead.
Oh, yeah, his actor or whatever.
Well, Jim Henson, but...
Well, the newer one.
No, they just fired him because apparently he was a dick.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, after many false starts in this issue, or episode, we're going to be talking about Detective Comics 37, 38, and the first story for Batman number one. That's going to be pretty great. So, in 37, we have Batman stopping for directions. 38 brings us Robin finally. Covering the first story in Batman number one is Joker's first appearance, which I didn't realize they kind of adapted a little bit for Laughing Fish, one of the Batman anime series episodes.
They've adapted it more than that. We'll get to that later, though.
Yep. And this is Detective Comics number 37.
Detective Comics issue number 37, published in March 1940. So what was happening in the early part of 1940? A young Elmer Fudd made his cinematic debut in Elmer's Candid Camera. A demigod named Chuck Norris was sired on March 10th to an earthquake and much wailing and gnashing of teeth, according to a 10-year-old GeoCities post. And in actual tragedy, German forces entered Denmark on April 9th and pretty much took over the entire country in 6 hours.
That laugh wasn't about the whole taking over Denmark thing. It was more about the Chuck Norris stuff, just to be sure that I'm not laughing about actual historical
events. I know,
events.
I pronounced it GeoCities when it's Geocities.
That too.
I don't remember which one is. But now for the main event. Our cover picks up our Dark Knight detective picking up one of his would-be attackers into a textbook suplex. Suplex City, bitch.
It's fun because it actually, the cover matches the issue. I know that it's not always a thing. And even today, like, there's plenty of covers out there where the cover has a character doing something that doesn't ever take place in the issue. It's always been a thing in comics. It always will be a thing in comics. But it's refreshing that a Batman issue actually showed the current one and not a past one or a future one. It was nice.
We're a couple years away from when they're just going to start putting monkeys on there, because for some reason, like, issues that had monkeys on the cover would sell better.
Is that how Detective Chimp got started?
It's entirely possible, actually. So what does our 10 cents get us this month, though? It features Brett Regan, spy in The Ring of Death. Cosmo, the Phantom Disguise on Mutiny on the Sea Swan. The Crimson Adventure returns for Laura Burlingame's been kidnapped. Speed Sanders in The Crime Roundup. And then Steve Malloy in Miss Cooper is Kidnapped. I'm noticing a theme. Cliff Crosby in Judge Carson. And Slam Bradley in A Dynamic Gift. But most importantly, Batman, The Screaming House, also known as The Spies. Written by Bill Finger, with pencils by Bob Kane and Jerry Robinson, and ink by Bobby Too.
How much of that did Bob Kane actually do, though?
He's credited with,
He's credited with a lot of things.
Well, no,
he's...
Him and, because I've been kind of noticing, him and Jerry Robinson sometimes will be said, will get dual credit for pencils.
Is that why I see a lot of ears being different heights in some panels?
It's entirely
possible.
Where,
like, all of a sudden the cowl, like, the cheeks and the cowl are way higher than other, in other panels and stuff.
I think that it's, like, we're going to get into this when we talk about some of the introductions, because there's a lot of people that disagree. A lot of these three guys that disagree, but this was the team that was kind of putting it together. Even though Bob kind of has this reputation of taking credit for everything, he was there, and he was drawing a lot of this stuff. And it's obvious because it still looks... You can tell the same guy is still drawing a lot of this stuff.
Especially, like, backgrounds and, yeah. And landscapes and stuff like that look very similar. So I like that the issue starts off with the bat with the intro actually in it that they've been doing for, what, about 5-6 issues now at least. And it just introduces him not as the legendary Batman, but the almost legendary figure.
He hasn't even been around for a year. Legends have to take a little longer than
well,
that.
Well, I mean, why even mention it? You don't go, I'm almost a doctor. You just say, I'm a doctor when you're a doctor, and then you say pre-med otherwise. This is like, for like a page and a half, it ends up Batman being, I just like him just sounding really meek and just, oh, bother. And don't, guys, sorry, I'm almost a legendary figure. I'm sorry to bother you. He's not very confident in the first couple of panels.
He's
bipolar, kind of.
He's not the one that wrote Legendary, so. Okay, so anyways, our story begins outside of Coolsville with Scoob and the gang stopping by a creeping house for directions. Oh, wait, this is Batman's. It's a Batman comic. So Batman's stopping by for directions, still dressed up like Batman.
How does Batman get lost? He's just... Why does he have to prove that he's the world's worst detective sometimes?
And what was he doing just in the countryside?
And also, I'm just going to point this out, another one of those him just being very insecure things is, he stops for directions, he hears a scream, right? Like, that's the first couple of images. And then he says, I'm probably sticking my head out for trouble. You're Batman! That's kind of been your thing from the beginning! How is this news to you? Why are you debating this with yourself?
It's just his way of saying, I bet some people are about to die because I'm going to get involved. So, I'm going to give our readers a little warning. Batman is feeling particularly sassy in this issue.
He's a little manic. Like, he starts off with, he walks into the house... And he sees that mobsters are torturing another man. He's saying that you sold some information. We want to know who you sold it to. All this other stuff. And when Batman comes in, he says, don't you think that fella's chest is getting a little cold? Hope I'm not intruding, gentlemen. Like, it's just so odd. And he's being so... I know it's supposed to be sassy, but I interpret it at first as just him being a nerdlinger.
Well, I mean, Joey's tied up to a chair surrounded by a group of sweaty men. His shirt's ripped open Captain Kirk style. And they're about to poke him with a hot iron. And so it seems that, like, we're adding another kinky layer to this whole thing by having a guy in a big costume show up.
Batman's just content on watching and hoping he's not intruding. And then he's like, well, you think you're so smart, or you're not as smart as you seem.
I love
and
that.
He's like, on the contrary, I'm just going to start kicking your asses.
Well,
and, like,
no, he proves
right
that.
In the chest.
He proves how smart he is by kicking two guys in the face at the same time.
He does some high kick. Like, he's a rock cat in that panel.
And then he says, I hope I don't play too rough. So again, kind of getting into the sex thing we were talking about.
And he does start getting, he's getting quippy and he's getting sassy. Like, he keeps that tone the rest of it. But the first couple panels for me, I just get stuck on. He takes all the mobsters out, and then he unties the man that was being tortured, and he uses the same rope on those mobsters. And when his back is turned, our mobster, and he was Joey, right?
Yeah, Joey smacks him with a blackjack.
Our mobster Joey hits him gun, what's that one I'm thinking of? Gun butt.
No, that's a blackjack.
No, it's a gun.
Oh, okay. Well, he hits him with a gun butt. Which is smart, because if he uses the front of it, he's going to bend the sight, so he won't be able to
pistol
shoot.
Pistol whip. Sorry. I was trying to think of the term pistol whip, and I couldn't do it. So he pistol whips Batman, knocks him out, shoots the other guys, and spares Batman, probably because he saved him. And when Batman wakes up from consciousness, he's like, oh my god, these men are dead. I didn't think I hit him that hard.
No.
How can he not identify bullet holes?
The grim dark knight detective... decides to solemnly make a joke upon waking up and seeing all the carnage that Joey has wrought. Because we're out of the dark and brooding days. Like, boy, I didn't think I hit him that hard, guys, huh? Oh, you're all dead.
I I know I'm reading it completely wrong. I kind of like it being him just being like the world's worst detective, and I'm just stuck on that.
Well, I mean, we cut to Bruce, who's doing some actual detective work, and he's looking up the names of their boss, which they mentioned during their torture breaks. It seems that there are three Turgs in the book, so Bruce puts on his favorite smoking jacket and smokables and decides to visit them. I've determined that the first two were pretty sweet guys. He discovers that the third is a shitty grocer. It seems his shop is in an awful part of town. We ask the clerk for sugar. He says, drugs a whores. Also, as luck would have it, Turg tends to walk in with Joey at that time. Bruce decides to visit later that night for the whores. I mean, for the gang. For the gang.
I know you're adding that bit in there, because I just had to go back and look, and like, did he say whores in there?
No, he just asked for sugar.
But I like that. He comes back later, because he sees the actual Turg walk past and everything. He's like, okay, this is a front. There's no way this isn't a front. And he just comes in, kicks the grocer's ass, and then just proceeds to, like, walk downstairs and bust up the rest of the mob.
He doesn't bust up the mob, though. He walks in, he's like, hey, Joey, how's your chest doing? And Joey's very nice about it. He's like, fine.
That's the thing, though. It's just, he basically gives him up. Like, he just rats him out, like, immediately and puts him in danger. And I just love it. It's kind of like, it's a sly kind of dick move, but it's definitely a dick move.
Well, they really became pals last night.
They really bonded before Joey pistol whipped Batman in the back of the head.
So Batman then flicks off the lights and reaches into his black cloak for some night vision goggles.
Which is really cool tech. Like, having that then is so nice, and I was really excited to see that. This is one of the more fun gadgets besides the Batarang, which is basically a boomerang, so I don't know if you can qualify that as a real gadget.
What do you think about the black cloak, though? Because it's obviously dark blue.
I mean, is Bob Kane colorblind? Well, actually, wait. Is Bill Finger colorblind?
Stop blaming everything on Bob Kane.
I kind of want to just a little bit. I'm sorry, guys. If you want to send hate mail, send it to sac.alfred@gmail.com. I'll make sure Chris opens that and he can send it right along to me.
I think that's like supposed to be that like it's supposed to be black, but it's blue for simplicity's sake. During like the Grant Morrison's run of The Black Glove, mentioned that Batman's always hitting things with his black glove, but it's obviously blue.
Is that like printing limitations and stuff too a little bit?
I think it's just an easier way to keep the character in focus.
And do shading and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, so he...
Damn you with your technical reasons for things happening. Just let me blame Bob Kane.
So he beats up the gang in the dark, and then he just leaves.
Like, he doesn't finish the job. He could just take them all out, torture them for information, or, you know, hold them for information, because Batman doesn't do that besides for forcing confessions, which we'll see again in the next issue.
So the gang doesn't really question why Batman just randomly walked in, punched their dicks off their bodies, and then left. But they decide it must be Joey's fault. And so they just stab him and conclude that he must have told Batman all their plans. After they leave, Batman comes out of hiding and cradles his dead friend, who gives exposition like it's a broken dam. It seems the plan was to blow up a foreign ship and plunge the U.S. into an international incident. Remember, these are very murky times politically, as I've kind of mentioned the last two episodes. So depending on whose boat they blow up, they could be brought into a completely different side of the war. For example, around this time when I was kind of looking up what was happening in the world, a member of the State Department visited all of the various leaders of the world. And it was really funny, like, I got, like, just a little quote of what he thought of everybody from, like, he thought that, like, Neville Chamberlain, who was the British PM, was kind of a pussy. And he said that Churchill was like drunk when he met with him. But
I'm real glad I have the expletive tab clicked up on iTunes just for things like that.
Well, Neville was a pussy though. He let the Nazis roll over for him, and like he even said that like Hitler was kind of rude, but at the same time he seemed like a nice guy or something like that. So we're at this point where like the Holocaust is not something a lot of people know about.
It's kind of hidden from part of the world. Things. Yeah,
and so. Very much could be brought into either side of the war at this point. So Joey admits everything, but he's not a spy. He just needed the money. See, Joey has a boy at home. He's not doing so good.
Was he a small town boy living in South Detroit?
He was working as a paper boy. Screaming extra. I'm sorry. Screaming extra at the top of his lungs when he didn't pay his protection money to Boss Zuko. And he broke his legs. So he needed to do this, but he's really a patriot at heart, and so he asked Bruce to get him for the good old US of A.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to say, like, I'm on my deathbed, but I have enough time to say good old US of A. So he tells him about the boat, he tells him about the harbor, and he tells him of, I think he slips him a phone number for this contact that they have.
So Bruce arrives at the scene and for the third time in this issue announces his presence to the gang before he does anything.
Why do you need the element of surprise? That's just, you know, for pussies.
And he does it with a joke. Almost a little too perfect to say. Oh, I didn't really set that up though.
Good.
No, that's what he says. I'm not going to explain because it was just like, this is the perfect job. And they're going to smash a boat full of explosives into another boat. It's really not that perfect.
He's like, I just took the last thing you said and slightly turned it around. Aren't I funny? So, you know, my kind of jokes.
So Batman gets a giant sack of grain dropped on his head for his troubles. They dump all the grain out and they sack Batman by throwing him into the waters on the pier. But Batman is okay with this because he just cuts himself out and proceeds to beat the holy hell out of all of them.
Well, at least they explain, like, the shock of hitting the water kind of woke him up. But they, like, for some reason, that bag has enough air in it that the water doesn't collapse around it. And he has enough room to actually, like, move around.
It's actually a very good point, John. So it beats them all up with the help of a crane. Then there's really not that much to it.
No, the rest of it is basically he beats everybody up real quick. He runs to, and we skipped this part entirely, actually, the way they're going to blow up the large boat owned by either the U.S. or another country is by filling up a smaller boat with all the explosives and then just sending it in that direction so they have enough time to, when it hits and explode, they have enough time to get away so then the finger's not pointing at them.
Yeah, I already mentioned that. Go on, though.
Hey, guys, I don't listen to Chris very well. So.
Anyways, he jumps on the boat, and the USA is A-okay after he steers it out of the way.
And he stops it. I like how they're like, this won't point back to us at all, but I'm pretty sure it's called, like, the SS Turg.
It is, isn't it? So next Batman is after the leader. After another tip from sweet, sweet Joey, he goes to see a man called Count Grunt.
You know what rhymes with grunt?
Punt. It's the type of boat that they were going to smash into the other boat. It's a clue.
Yes.
Right? What were you thinking of?
No, you're fine.
Okay. So after manhandling Grunt's manservant, Batman confronts the man himself, who throws a saber at him. But it's no ordinary saber. It's the sword from Who Framed Roger Rabbit that can change directions, like 90 degrees mid-flight, so it embeds himself in the door.
How, that's gotta explain it, because how strong is he that he throws it and it lands, like, it's like a solid, like, 8 inches into that door. How strong are you, man?
But at the same time, it's like, he throws it, Batman's standing in front of the door.
It turns 90 degrees, like, mid-throw.
And embeds itself into the door. And so, he bum-rushes Batman, who just punches him once and knocks him right into the sword, because not enough people have died in this issue. And John even does some odd teleporting so he can, like, be in front of the door, even though he was rushing towards the door.
I guess because this is still a time where Detective Comics is not just Batman. It's shared, a bunch of stories are in this issue. So maybe they just ran into page space and didn't want to redraw everything. And just like, okay, we're trying to take out those panels where he's like fighting around the room and it's just instant door.
Yeah, no.
They're just lazy.
They had it set up, like they have one page to do it in.
Oh, you're right. Like one little panel where he turns around. So, but he still kind of teleports a little
bit. He does teleport. There's a lot of weird things so that this guy can die.
And then, so he has it all set. It's all squared away. And in next month, they talk about the Monster Men, which doesn't actually happen. They skip it.
Nope.
I assume publication errors. In Detective Comics number 38, Robin finally joins us.
Now it's time to reveal the sensational character find of the 40s. Red Logan.
Robin!
Tell us a little bit about the cover.
It is just Batman holding one of those, and I'd never seen it beyond, like, Forrest Gump, like, 1960s kind of stuff, Robin busting through one of those drum kind of banners.
Yeah, it's what footballers would do at a big game.
Yeah, I don't know sports either, so I don't know how many baskets they make or anything.
All right, it's football. Second drink. Okay.
But it's Robin busting out of there. He actually has the bandana fully around his head and everything. It's not just a Domino's mask. A Domino mask. He delivers pizza. It's not just a Domino mask. Short shorts,
you know,
and pixie boots.
It was awful when Robin was delivering those pizzas in the 80s and he didn't avoid the Noid. And the Noid beat him to death and his pizza to death with a crowbar.
I like to think that he was delivering pizzas to that one kid from the first Ninja Turtles movie. Like, he was just off. It was a deleted scene.
Oh, John, it's been a number of years since I've seen that. So Robin was based on the author's love of reading Robin Hood as a kid. I've read a few different interviews, and basically Finger and Robinson both take credit for the inspiration of this. Robin's outfit and name were obviously taken from the history's greatest vigilante.
But his abilities and everything else? No resemblance.
Not really, no. We'd have to wait another year before Green Arrow would be equal parts Robin Hood and Batman.
Yeah,
he even had an arrow cave, for God's sake.
And an arrow car. Like,
Quiver would have been such a better name for it. That's from the Injustice game.
Well, Green Arrow's a ripoff of, because we're going to sidetrack right now, Green Arrow's a ripoff of Batman. Batman's a ripoff of Zorro and the Shadow,
and there's a whole one. All of comics are ripped off of all the other comics.
Pretty much.
Hey, did you see Doctor Strange movie? Who, Doctor Fate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see the Aquaman's in the... You mean Namor?
I think Aquaman's before Namor, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's like the same thing. It's like Marvel has their own counterpart. I think that there is a hawked eye individual that would say that he was better than Green Arrow. Somebody was talking about how Hawkeye was in a movie, and I go, it was one of my employees, and, and I just go, really, Alan Alda was in a video recently? And it's like, no, the Avenger. So I felt really old. So the character was introduced to help drive sales for comics to kids, and it worked, like, super well. They actually, like, doubled, in some cases, quadrupled the number of people that were buying Detective Comics and the soon-to-be-released Batman number one.
Because someone had 15 cents to spend. It's probably some kid, like, hanging out. They had time to read it.
Robin was so popular that for the next, basically, 3 decades... he would always be with Batman in every single story. Robin, however, would get his own spin-off story 7 years later in Star Spangled Comics until 1952.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, to put that into perspective, the closest thing Batman got to a Robinless title was Brave and the Bold when it turned into a Batman team-up in the late 60s. So what are our thoughts on Robin?
He's fun. He's energetic. It's basically they took sassy Batman that we saw the last few issues and they just applied it to a child character, which makes a lot of sense. They say Batman or Robin lightens up Batman and everything, but he was kind of getting that way before.
He was already there.
Yeah, they just gave it a physical form as Robin.
So what do you think about taking a 10-year-old boy, I'm assuming that's around the age, right? 10, 12,
I think that's
maybe,
the standard for this.
And just kind of endangering him.
Well, Bruce, Batman, the same person, doesn't have any regard to human life.
We've
established this quite firmly at this point. I mean, first issue alone, he kills 2 to 3 people. Heck, in this one, we're going to see Robin just straight up kill some
guys. Yeah, who would have thought that Robin's introduction would have the highest body count that we've seen thus far?
I think he beats Bruce in this, actually. Like, he is a young upcomer in this. But the issue starts off with Robin's backstory, which actually is much more fun than Batman's backstory. We get it. Your parents die in an alley. Move on.
So Detective Comics 38, featuring Bart Regan Spy, the Electric Assassin, Red Logan, Dr. Hydekill, the Crimson Avenger, the Phony Jewel Robbery, Speed Saunders, the Kidnapped Singer. This is our third kidnapped one story in this issue. There were 2 in the last issue. And Steve Malloy, the Gambler's Protector. If gamblers need anything, it's a lot of protection. But enough of that shit. Batman and Robin, the Boy Wonder, written by Bill Finger, with pencils by Bob Kane and inks by Jerry Robinson. And I don't give a shit who lettered it. Our story begins at the circus. The crowds. The clowns. The smell of elephant shit. And something else stinks. It seems a young trapeze tramp named Dick Grayson overhears some thugs threatening the circus owner to pay protection. I got a lot of spit in my mouth. They tell him to piss off, and wouldn't you know it, an action happens anyway.
Anytime you want to stop that, it'd be great.
Well, they do. He's being threatened with a protection racket. And they say, well, if you don't pay up, an accident's going to happen. I bet he feels super stupid, too, because an accident does happen that night. And in front of young bachelor and oversized code enthusiast Bruce Wayne, who was sitting in the front row.
I just like how everyone else is so far away, but apparently he has such a front row seat. He's so much... He's basically in the ring. Like, he's so close to everybody else because everyone else is so out of perspective. And that dumb hat. That stupid hat. It's not even like a fedora. It's all downturned. It's dumb. I hate that hat. I hate Bruce.
John. He always gets so mad about the weirdest things. So anyways, he wants to go to the police, but unfortunately, a young...
Well, his parents die.
Well, yeah, I think I mentioned that.
No, we didn't.
Oh, well, talk about his parents dying.
It's a minute detail. We've heard it so often that I think it's one of those things that you just assume everybody knows. So the accident is that while Dick has finished his part of the routine, his parents are continuing theirs, and the rope snap, and they fall, and they die. 90% of this is off screen, so that's kind of disappointing. They show everybody else dying, but I guess we'll just leave them out of it.
We did see a lot of dead bodies.
It turns out that the mobsters for the that wanted the protection money put acid on the rope, and that's why they died. While Dick is just sitting there very sad, Bruce comes up to him. Or Batman, sorry.
Batman comes up to him because he's going to go to the police. But Batman has another idea. See, the police are all owned by mob boss Zuko. And so he decides that the best thing to do is to take this boy and train him.
Because fuck Commissioner Gordon.
In the deadly arts. Tumbling. Punching. Gravity-defying throws. Swearing oaths. And finally, an easy-to-spot colored outfit.
Where are they swearing that oath? Because we've seen Batman's lair, quote-unquote. You know, the one with the secret door but still has a window that everyone can see outside, from outside. It's just a dark void with
a candle. It's just a candle. He just went into the candle room.
It's the weakest.
You don't have a candle room, John?
No.
Where are your birds at right now? They're not in the candle room? Ooh.
Am I supposed to have a candle room?
Everybody's supposed to have a candle room. Where do you go to relax?
I just sit on the couch.
In the candle room, where do you go to swear your allegiance to people? The first time you proposed to your lovely wife, you didn't do it in the candle room?
I did it in my pajamas. Oh, actually, during a break of watching The Dark Knight.
Interesting.
But we continue. So after a bunch of training, Robin's ready, according to Bruce. And the first thing Bruce tells him is, go get a job. Because child labor laws don't matter. Bruce needs some money. He's hit some hard times. And damn if he's going to work himself.
So Robin is set up as a newsie. As we know, our series has a lot of newsies thus far.
Extra jewel robbery.
Extra
jewel.
Hey, mister. Is this your new beat, huh? Well, you gotta pay money to Mr. Zuko or else you're gonna get your feet broken.
So basically, Dick, being a newspaper boy, he's approached by two older boys that are also part of the same racketeering scheme.
It's weird that we have to set this all up, though, because later on we find out that he knows everything already.
Yeah.
There's no reason for this. But anyways, he follows them back to Zuko's home because, you know, Zuko is definitely going to have the boys give him the money directly to him, right?
Yeah,
no,
like they wouldn't have
like tons of go-betweens.
You wouldn't have in-betweens, you wouldn't have lieutenants, nothing. I like to think that these are just like Zuko's nephews or something. Like they're just like, okay, your mom keeps bothering me, saying you need a job, here you go.
So we meet Zuko, and we kind of talked earlier about like things that you don't think actually happened in media, but it's just something that was kind of like ingrained, like the whole extra thing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So Zuko has this verbal tic where he says "see" after every single sentence.
Yeah, I do have that in my notes. Find Zuko. See, 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 see. He used it like a fucking comma.
I think it's Edward James Olmos. No, never mind. That was a dumb thing to say, but it's. I should have written it down, but there was a character that like was a famous mobster. Like
little... Capone?
No, like it was a movie about a monster, mobster, that was based on like
his
little angel or something, where they kind of based this performance on him, but still, it's something that
they
I don't
do that
think
for some
Warner
Brothers, like that little that little mobster guy with like the 10-gallon hat on and stuff.
Shut up, Muggsy. Talking out of the side of his mouth.
So we do a cutaway scene to Zuko explaining his whole racketeering scheme to the people that know his racketeering scheme.
But it seems that Zuko wants a little more grin.
He doesn't care about Batman. You know, he wants people to pay, and if they start trouble, you push right back on them. And it cuts away to the next night, and Batman's just busting heads everywhere.
He just, I mean...
And he's not, got so much sass.
There's
so
not
much
that
sass,
much,
and I love it.
There's not that much to really talk about, because it's just like, he just punches people.
It's an 80s montage of Batman.
Well, this is our second montage thus far.
I love it.
And so he just keeps punching people.
I do like one where he very comedic, like Three Stooges-like, knocks two mobsters' heads together and was hollow, just as I thought. It's like,
He's got the biggest smile. You can tell that he loves this.
He's taking out some frustration.
He busts into, like, gambling halls and throws tables at everybody.
He does. Like, he clears out the table, and all the people around that are visiting this casino are such compulsive gamblers that they're just like, free money, this is great! And Batman's doing some ballroom blitz where he does a weird dance move, and he hurls a roulette table over his head, and he does, like, a Pete Townsend impression, and he just throws that to the ground.
Smiling the entire time that he does it.
He's loving this.
He busts up, like, slot machines that are around that Zuko owns. So Zuko is pissed.
He's tearing shit up.
So Zuko is so pissed that when Batman sends him a bat box full of a bat trap and a bat with a bat paper on it, he decides to go to the building that Batman said, hey, don't you bother messing with this building. It's under my protection. You better get out of town.
And apparently, Robin's smart enough, or on Bruce's instruction, Robin follows Zuko and just hitches a ride on his car.
So this next bit is insane.
It's great. And it's insane, like, Robin has to be a sociopath or something. But at the same time, he's having so much fun and causing so much damage that I love it.
He rushes in without Batman. He just starts killing people left and right.
He's doing, like, some David and Goliath shit, like, just slinging rocks at people. And they're, like, on the top of a building that's partially finished.
He's tackling them and, like, judo flipping them. And they're all falling. We don't see them fall, but, like,
there's no way they can keep their balance.
There's no way these people aren't dead.
It's heavily implied. Like, I'm thinking 1, 2, and then 3. In this first scene, so about 3.
Start over.
So we're going to count those.
So that's 1.
Okay. 2.
Yep.
That's the same guy, so
no,
that would be...
No, that's somebody else, I think.
No, in that panel and that one? Same color suit?
Okay, well, still, he's got three people he's killing. We've
killed at least 3, and then in the next panel, or the next page, Robin loses his footing, and he's on a girder that's just sticking out of the side of the building, like this is obviously over the street, that kind of thing. And he catches himself just before he falls, and a mobster comes to try to finish him, because he's a circus performer, and he's got this crazy amount of agility. He loops around and knocks the guy off the girder. That's at least 4th kill.
I think that we're more into the 6. So then Batman decides to come in and he starts punching Zuko.
And then while Zuko is apparently knocked out or stunned or anything, takes another mobster. And again, he forces a confession. This shit isn't admissible.
What does he do though?
He hangs him off the girder.
He like puts a rope around his neck and hangs him and dangles him. So we're going to do a full stop. Do you think that Bob Kane understands how necks work? I don't think that he does.
I don't think he knows how abducting a 10-year-old boy named Dick works either, though.
Fair enough. So the lynching over, Zuko hip checks the guy for confessing. But unluckily for the poor bastard, this seemed to be their plan the entire time, because as he falls, they snap a picture of it to incriminate Zuko.
Is that what they're doing?
Yes.
Oh, I thought when... I was going to talk about this. I thought when Batman tells Robin to snap it, he meant the rope and to send him to his death.
No, he's taking a picture of him.
Either way, they facilitated a murder. They they're
accessories.
Oh, definitely. I mean, once you kill like 6 people after that point, it probably doesn't matter, but oh my god.
So it finds out that Zuko goes to jail for this murder along with the confession, which shouldn't be admissible. And the dynamic duo decides that violating child endangerment laws and murder is super fun, so the legend is born, stained with the blood of his victims.
It's like he indoctrinated Dick early. We're gonna have fun with that. He indoctrinates him really early where it's like, okay, you probably want to go back to being like, you know, an orphan in the circus now. He's like, no, I'll hang out with you. We'll kill more people together.
That was
you
so
need
much,
a partner, right?
That was so much fun. I didn't want you to have all the fun. He murdered a lot of guys.
I swear there's no way that Robin hasn't already killed more people in a single issue than Batman. Yeah. That has to be top tier. I really, really like this issue, even for the absurdities, but it's fun absurdities. It's not me complaining about a werewolf vampire that can't figure out if it wants to be a werewolf or a vampire.
Or Wolverine.
Or something. It's just fun, it's silly, it's absurd, and there's some serious stuff in it, you know, like killing 6 people, but there's enough endearing fun things about it that I don't care.
Yeah, the last 2 issues were actually like the best we've read thus far.
They're easy to remember, they're easy to talk about, they're fun to talk about and read. It's great.
Well, speaking of easy to remember, this is one of those stories that obviously comes up quite a bit. Showed up in kind of a truncated form in Batman Forever. Shows up in like,
yeah, but Robin's, he's like, you know, a 19-year-old
yeah,
kid,
but still
played by a 30-year-old man.
It's like Robin's Reckoning from the animated series did this. I'm sure the Batman and others did stuff like this.
See, so we've seen Robin, this is the first time we see Robin's origin story, and it's so much more fun than Batman's origin story. I mean, it's still tragic and there's a lot of similarities, but I could read a comic that focuses on his parents, and I could read a bunch of variations on that and not get tired of it. But Bruce is just, it's one of those ones that just is beating me over the head so often that I don't care anymore.
Well, and we'll get into when they decide to do a completely different origin story for Bruce later on.
Well, what's that?
Oh, you'll find out.
Ooh.
So, let's go on to the next issue. Sorry, John.
Oh, this is the part that's going to go at the end of the episode that I like doing. And now we're going to talk about Batman number one, particularly the first story in Batman number one, which is the first appearance of the Joker. And there's a second story of Batman number one, because we're totally going to skip Batman's origin story. I know it. Chris knows it. You know it.
And it's also just a reprint of something that we've already
seen. It's the exact same thing. They like colored it a little bit different, I think. And that's about it.
Here is The Joker, written by Bill Finger, with pencils by Bob Kane and inks by Jerry Robinson.
Look at that Bela Lugosi-looking motherfucker.
So The Joker. Who knows about this obscure character?
I like thinking that it was the guy in, what was it, Detective Comics 27 or 28? The one that falls into the vat of acid? You know, the same lab that had the hamster-killing glass cage?
It's 27.
Yeah. I like to think that it's that guy. He just, like, got in shape and he's just all manic and everything. It's so much better than him just being some Red Hood guy.
So The Joker, based on the character from the Silent Era movie, The Man Who Laughs. You ever seen it?
Absolutely not, but I've seen the picture of the guy and it's
The Joker. It's an interesting movie where it's about a man whose face is permanently scarred to that smile, and it's a really creepy effect.
That's 100% a ripoff. He does that
the entire time. So Bob Kane, Bill Finger, and Robinson all refute each other's claims on who actually created the Joker. Bob says it was all him.
It seems like the further back you go on comic book history and stuff, the pettier it is. Like, it can still be petty now even, but like it seems more dramatic getting credit for character creation and stuff like that.
So do you like the Joker, John?
He's fun. He's so much fun in this issue. He's manic and he's crazy, and he doesn't actually do that many jokes at the beginning.
He doesn't do any jokes. He's actually very somber.
It's great. He's manic, and I love it, though.
So our story unfolds with an elderly couple listening to the radio. You know, Harry, we could be engaging in intercourse right now. Yes, dear, you do look nice in that hat.
I'm surprised they didn't use the gay couple from a couple issues ago.
True. It seems somebody calling himself the Joker wants to kill somebody calling themselves Harry Carnage and steal his diamond. So the police, led by Inspector Zenigata, surround the house at midnight, and Harry dies. John knows this, but I'm a massive Lupin the Third fan.
Do they do a bit like this?
One of the trademarks of the series is that he always leaves announcements and says that by midnight he'll steal something. And then and then like the police officer that's always trying to capture him will have the whole house full of people and he'll do it anyways right underneath his nose.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, so basically the whole thing is just a big loop on the third thing. But instead of just stealing his valuables, the guy dies with a ghastly smile on his face.
As soon as I see that grin of him just on the floor, dead, with that huge smile on his face, I automatically remember an old Batman animated series episode, which is Laughing Fish, I think it's called, and I watched it last night. And they don't take it, like, you know, panel for panel, they don't base off the whole thing, but there's a scene in it, a cat drags in a Joker fish, and starts being affected by the toxin and attacks its owner. And he dies, and there's, you know, a big grandfather clock like we're seeing in this house for the first murder. And it was just a fun little nod that I didn't realize was a nod at the time.
Well, I was going to talk about this at the end, but to be perfectly honest, this is without a doubt one of the most redone stories in the Batman canon. So in the 70s, there's going to be a run of comics called Strange Apparitions, where the Laughing Fish was based on. It's basically a remake of this. The Man Who Laughs is a remake of this story. Batman 89 has elements of it where he announces his weird plans to everybody and then kills everybody. And would you believe that The Dark Knight is actually based on this and the next story?
Yeah, because there's a scene that we'll talk about where the Joker's disguised. And
he's
that
disguised
was,
as a police officer.
It's fantastic. You gave it
and
away.
And he's announcing all his crimes in the next issue. He will break out of prison by using a bomb that he's hidden on himself. So they actually borrowed quite heavily from these two stories.
It's fun seeing that, like, retroactively. Fun just realizing that it's been done. And it's not surprising. They're more meant as homages to the source material and everything. So I like seeing that. Yeah.
So the police check around, and they find out that the diamond has been replaced by a fake. The Joker has won this round. Next, we see the man himself brooding. Yes, brooding over his victory. But he still has time for a playing card pun, so everything is okay.
He does have a little bit of a grin. He's like, okay, the police are really stupid. I basically poisoned the man a day before, and my, and they don't say it this way, but I'm calling it it. My Joker toxin takes 24 hours. So I've already done it ahead of time. I've just given him a false lead, and I've jerked him around a little bit.
I do the, like, this thing that I just noticed clever. While I'm looking at it, is that he has a big clown face on his wall, too.
Oh, he does.
So it's like, even back then, we had, like, the Joker's egotism.
Again, I'm just gushing, but it makes the Joker so much more endearing.
So, at home, Dick wonders why they haven't gone after the Joker yet. And Bruce says that more people have to die before he can really do that.
We gotta sit on it. Just yeah, a little we bit. Wanna, we know the we police aren't going to do anything very well, but we got to wait for our chance. You know, I never rushed ahead on anything before this. Why would I start now? I like that he's lying to Dick about his previous exploits. Like, no, I totally didn't kill anybody before this, and everything went super well. No one's gotten the better of me. I didn't have a fat guy that had a blimp, like, get the better of me ever in a fight. That never happened.
So then we get kind of a repeat of the same thing. Another announcement, more police surrounding the area.
But he does a very Scooby-Doo thing. He knocks out all, the man dies, and he knocks out all the police with a gas, and he's just hidden in an armor when he does this. So he just, you know, he's been there the whole time, possibly hours, releases this this poison gas that knocks him out, doesn't kill him, it knocks out the police. And it's just such a Scooby-Doo thing that it's fantastic.
And so we cut to a bar of all places. Because, well, the dynamic duo doesn't want to do anything, the underworld does. They decide that since they plan to steal them purdy stones, the Joker had cut into their territory and must be stopped. Then I guess they go around and tell everybody because Bruce hears about it too and decides that now that a criminal is being threatened, he better step in.
I like that these gangsters are in this bar are just for exposition and nothing else. You don't see this mobster wearing a yellow hat talking shit.
Well, no, this is the gang that we see in the next panel. This is Brute Nelson.
See, I thought what it was that they were like, we don't like Brute, and we're going to set up Brute and the Joker against each other, and that way Joker's taken care of, Brute might be taken care of, we're just going to, you know, have him deal with
it. Oh, no, I thought that this was Brute that the Joker also hears and decides to go meet up at his house.
So if you want to correct our interpretations, that email again is sac.alfred@gmail.com.
Well, anyways, they all schedule a meeting with Brute Nelson for tea and ass kickings. Nelson has the Joker surrounded, but luckily Batman shows up to save our favorite psychopath.
He just gets in the way.
He does.
I like that this is that classic Joker trench coat outfit with the flat hat, all the purple and everything. Like, it's just, that it's endured that long is just fantastic.
It's amazing that we kind of talked about how up until the new 52 Batman was pretty much unchanged in his outfit and everything. It's pretty much the same for the Joker. I mean, they just decided to rip his face off at some point.
Yeah,
which I think they undid that, didn't they?
His face heals somehow. And that's my weak point right now, is about issue 17 of New 52.
Whoa, I just stopped. Okay, settle down.
I wasn't going to go any further.
But I don't really care. So anyways, Batman just beats him up, and then the Joker escapes as he takes out the goons. Not before he leaves, though, he decides to shoot Nelson for his troubles. And then what does Joker drive away in, John?
It's like he stole Bruce Wayne's car, actually. I wasn't even going to mention the sedan. I was going to let the sedan thing go.
No, I was gonna
also,
give
his
that
roadster
sedan.
In Batman's roadster in the last issue. I love that roadster.
So Batman jumps onto the back, and then he has a little fight with the Joker, who actually kind of beats the shit out
He's
of him.
He's going toe-to-toe with him. It's the first time
that somebody's actually, like, beat Batman this whole time.
Apparently, the various racist stereotypes that we've seen of many different Asian cultures that have swords and scimitars and all that other stuff can't do it. But albino with green hair, he can totally take on Batman.
It's embarrassing when people can't live up to their stereotypes. So he drops a Batman off the bridge and thinks that he's killed him. It won't be the first time that's happened between the two of them.
And it's a little bit of a reach out last time, but the cold water shocks him and wakes him up.
So Joker is ready for killing number three, where he describes himself as the chief of police and kills a judge.
There's a great panel, and this is like, out of the three stories that we talked about today, this is my favorite panel. It's just of the Joker in this makeup, this camouflage, but he still has his stupid grin on his face and these big bushy, like, gray eyebrows and everything. But it's just him holding up, like, a jumbo playing card, but it's so devious.
And the design of his Joker playing card is like the one that they still use today. That's his, like, logo.
Yeah, absolutely.
It hasn't even changed.
But it's great, and I like that the Dark Knight takes this idea, and they alter it, obviously, because they're not sitting in the house, he's mm-hmm. out. But it's nice. It's a little tidbit. They're not beating me over the head with this reference. It's just there, and if you know it, fantastic, and if you don't, the story moves on. But yeah, that panel of just focusing straight on the Joker's face, holding up that playing card, saying that he has the winning card. Top panel for me.
So the Joker decides to leave, but first, he runs into Robin in a scene where he decides to make comic book history and is captured for the very first time. Batman's able to track him down with a magic infrared flashlight.
Again, this is one of those cool gadget things. Like, they don't just say, I have an infrared flashlight that can track footprints. It's, our boots are coated with stuff so that we can track each other. And I thought that was a nice...
Yeah.
A nice little
something that's a little bit different. I mean,
it's a technology that's possible.
It's not very detective-like, but...
It's not, like, a super leap in technology, but it's not super common either. So it's not like anybody can do this and find the other person. I mean, now, like, low-tech way of tracking.
So just as the Joker's about to give our boy a big old smile, Batman bursts in and lets his fist do the talking. In the scuffle, Joker shoots Batman in the face, but it's okay because I have special wizard armor that makes me immune to Joker toxin.
Yeah, it's basically like his physical strength and disposition help him fight off the poison.
Yeah, which is just bullshit. It's just like, oh, we probably shouldn't end it this way.
The Joker leaves while Batman overcomes the poison and saves Robin, and then they immediately chase after the Joker for, I believe, his fourth target.
Yeah, because he told Robin, because that's what you have to do when you have a superhero capture.
He let slip, like, after this, yeah. I'm gonna go somewhere else and do that. I find myself talking out loud when I don't need to, so I can buy into just, like, slipping, like you just said, Malone or something.
And so they engage him on the roof, and Joker shoots him, but also said armor works on bullets.
And I love this.
He actually does say that he has a bulletproof vest, which is a good...
Which is great, and Robin ends up helping to fight him and everything, but I just like, and this is my second favorite panel, and it's in the same issue.
When he throws a gun at him?
It's just, he throws a gun at him, and he's like, I'll kill you, but he's so manic that even though he's thrown a gun and he doesn't really have the upper hand anymore, I'm still a little surprised, I'm still, you know, a little bit in fear of it. It's just so much fun. I love it.
He throws it at Robin, and he jumps over to the next roof, but unfortunately, he runs into Robin. Now, Robin is good at one thing at this point, and it's knocking people off of roofs to their deaths.
He's got
the acrobatic. And that's just what he does. But lucky for the series as a whole, Batman quickly grabs him and punches him in the face. Then, in the prison, Joker vows his revenge, which is pretty good because he's going to be in the next issue, this issue as well.
That's a huge, Professor Hugo Strange. Does he ever become Doctor Strange?
No. He might have a doctorate, though.
No, I'm mixing up various characters in various media, aren't I?
Yes.
But he does. His panel is very reminiscent of Hugo Strange saying, "I'm going to get out of here and I'm going to get Batman."
Now, would it surprise you to know that he was going to die in this issue?
Yes.
Yes, he was originally going to die, but they needed another issue, so they decided to keep him alive for the last story in this issue.
That's a very good idea.
But and when we get to it, he also was supposed to die in that issue, so they changed the final panel. This begins something that, like, isn't really commented on that much in comics, but, like, the Joker's immunity to death.
Everyone's immune to death, and that's always commented on.
No,
comics.
But, like, the Joker in special, like, we won't see it, but, like, there's one where he gets electrocuted, and then he gets brought back to life. He gets stabbed in the chest at the end of this next issue.
Oh, you see him.
You will see this stuff, and you will see that he's able to survive the death in the family. He survives a helicopter explosion. Which we'll probably talk about. It's kind of an important story. Don't know if you've ever heard about it. But, like, they will do, when he finally returns, they'll do this big thing about how he survived the thing and he's still injured by it. So the Joker is able to survive all these different things. And it's something that hasn't really been explored. But it always kind of comes around.
Like, it's more of a nine lives thing as opposed to a miraculous I've come back kind of a way.
Yeah, but sometimes...
I mean, everyone comes back in comic books. His is more...
That's kind of his superpower.
Yeah. It's presented that way as opposed to extraordinary events. It's more of an extraordinary person. That'd be fun to kind of
take
go over
at,
and everything.
Yeah,
yeah. Not even just Joker, but people dying and coming back. Everyone's Jesus in DC Comics. I'm real sorry. If you want to send hate mail to us for that blasphemous statement, you can send it to sac.alfred.
John, save it for the plugs at the end of the show. So that's our show for today. Next issue, we'll be looking at the rest of Batman number one. It'll have the return of Hugo Strange, the Joker, and the introduction of a young Miss Selina Kyle. And it'll also be putting our look at the early days of Batman to rest. After that, we're going to be looking at the redhead stepchild of the Batman franchise, the Silver Age. Things are about to get wacky. But before we do that, we're asking all of our Robin's regulars to write in to tell us what you'd like us to look at in the Silver Age, or just to drop us a line about anything. Maybe you'll get on the show. John, why don't you tell them how they can get in touch with us?
So, if you want to get in contact with us on Twitter, we are at SACBatPod. You can also use the hashtag, and we'll try to find things that way. Again, it's at SACBatPod or hashtag SACBatPod. You can also email us at sac.alfred@gmail.com. Obviously, listen to us right now, but we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and many, many more. I think I'm only missing like Spotify at this point, but we're on many. So no matter the operating system you're on, the OS, whatever, you know, we have an avenue for you to listen to us. If you go to our website in the description, you can also find a full list of all those podcast directories.
So for Superstitious and Cowardly, I'm Chris Winia.
And I'm John Pfeiffer.
We don't have a sign-off line.
Bye, everybody. Night. We'll see you next week. Oh, crap. Shit.
That doesn't matter.